Autumn is in the air, the pumpkins are in the patch, and our friends at Manscaped are here to make sure you don't carve your pants, pumpkins, when you're grooming, if you know what I'm talking about. Make sure you're keeping things fresh this fall with the leaders in male grooming and their brand new fourth generation performance package. Boys, get ready for cuffing season like no other. Ready to take the leap into fall with Manscaped? Join the 2 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping using the promo code HAYES. That's H-A-Y-E-S. Get to manscaped.com. Use the promo code HAYES. You'll save 20% off plus free shipping.
I've got a little question for both of you that I get in trouble for quite a bit, and I'd like to know your technique in this particular matter. Okay. You know the sink in your kitchen? The little the crumb grabber at the bottom.
Yeah.
Do you like have that in there and let it collect all the food and stuff and then throw the food in the garbage, or do you take that out and like let all, I like to let the food go down the drain and stuff?
I got a carburetor, so I don't know. I know what you mean, but...
Well, what would you do if you didn't have a carburetor?
Well, I leave it in there to collect, and then I dump it out, because it'll start to build up in your sink, oh, and then you can get a smell, you can get, like, backlog, it can build up.
Yeah, I would... Okay, you don't want to, like...
My wife is staring at me right now.
She agrees with you, because
I
she
know.
Agrees with Andy.
I
she
just don't... Because... I just like to just let the stuff go down the drain, and it just disappears.
Is there a smell coming from your sink, though?
No, never.
Well,
never.
Watch out. It might. You can't... I
feel like that thing at the bottom of the sink, though, it, like, collects garbage.
Dude,
like
I don't know. I might report you, or somebody's going to knock on your... I don't think carburetors are allowed anymore.
Well, I used to have one. I don't have one anymore. Like at my old house.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Wait, is that... That's... What is that? That thing that you just... You put stuff in it and
Dude,
it just like...
the best. The carburetor is the best. Yeah.
Now, why is that bad?
My old... At our rental house in North York, we had a carburetor, and I think they're fantastic.
But why can't you have them anymore? Because they
I
just take off
illegal
your arm?
Or something. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to... I'm not going to... Nobody's broken any laws. We're not going to get into it, but my understanding is they might not be legal in Ontario. I don't know. Maybe. I don't... Hmm. I think out west, who knows? It might be legal. Are they illegal in Canada? I don't know.
I have no clue. I mean, it would scare me. I know my husband, when he was living in Chicago, he had one, and I didn't know he had one. And when I was kind of putting, you know, like things, food, whatever, debris got inside, it just went, and I went, what the heck was that? My hair is long. I thought, oh my goodness, imagine if my hair was down there. Did not like that thing whatsoever.
No, but,
that's the only time I've seen one.
Well, you control them with a switch or the magnetic thing
the
you put in there.
You just get
they
it put
great.
In illegally. It's just, I don't know, put them
well,
in.
I
think they're amazing.
We're not going there. My point being is I've heard of them. And they were in my rental house, the past house that we lived in. Not
Let's
in the
not go
one.
There.
Exactly.
It's Mail It In Friday on Overdrive, brought to you by Coors Light, Mountain Cold Refreshment, made to chill. Andy Petrillo filling on in for Brian Hayes, Noodles, O-Dog. They're still here, working away, slaving away, as Hayes is apparently at a stag. Or he had, wait, it's got to be reversed. He obviously had the stag last week and now has the wedding. Because the opposite, unless it's completely different couples. But either way, he slacked off the last two Fridays while you guys are working hard. And in a couple minutes, Dave Poulin is joining us.
Mail it like a personal day is coming up because I have a 3 to 4 week window where I actually need, like for just, I need it. I need a day off once a month. That's the way it goes. I need that break for a
That's
mental.
That's what weekends are for, though.
Like, no,
that's
no.
That's what Saturday and Sunday are for. Like Sunday, if there's golf on, like
Andy,
this Ryder Cup
you're
on
you're
Sunday,
on the
you
show once a year, Andy. Do you think once a month is like outrageous to like just say, you know what, I'm going to park it today. Like it's just not for me today.
Listen, it's a grind. I'm not going to lie. It's
Thank
a
you.
Grind doing it. I get you. I feel you. But, I mean, you do get weekends off though, right?
So what?
Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying.
Do you know how on that extra day, it's like it feels like a March break. It's like a week. It's amazing to just take a deep breath. You get away. I don't know. I think it's necessary.
I
think I should be added to my title as broadcaster slash co-host. I should be in charge of everyone's scheduling, and I'll allot certain days off to people so they're refreshed. And it'll be good.
The listeners wouldn't enjoy that because all of a sudden they'd be like, "Nah, there's no shows these days." You know, like, okay, just
Noodles.
Shut the station down on a Friday Noodles. Or whatever. What? Mm-hmm.
The whole show, our whole show should be off once a month, and the Grappler could put together best ofs. That's what producers are for, to make best of shows.
I will campaign for a four-day work week. I'm with you in that. Sometimes it feels like Saturday, you're just starting to unwind. Sunday starts, and you're already having to get ready for Monday. So where sometimes is the real break? I get it. I feel like a Friday, you start to wind down. Saturday is like a legit day off.
We have a guy on the line that would be a good person to ask. He knows about managing people.
Yeah, but he's what a hardworking guy.
But he would buy into the four-day work week for radio people.
So.
Andy, bring him in and ask him.
Is he there? Is our boy Dave Poole in there?
Yes,
he's there.
All right, Pools. What's up, Pooley? TSN Hockey Analyst. You thought you got rid of me.
I thought this was Leafs lunch. I didn't know what was going on.
I just switched it. Now starting at 4 o'clock. Pooley, we're trying to campaign for a four-day work week. I mean, I know this comes as a surprise to a lot of people. I'm actually agreeing with O on this. I do like it. I feel like, you know, people will be way more productive. I don't know how you feel about that.
I think it'd be terrific. Absolutely terrific. Yes, a big fan of the four-day work week. You'd be sharper. You'd be fired up. Just that little break. I think it'd be terrific.
Yeah, I know. Because Mondays ruin your Sundays.
I've also been sitting beside O for 5 years now on the panel. So some of O is rubbing off on me.
Yeah, he's just been chipping away at you. Chipping and chipping away at you.
Exactly right.
He's finally broken you down. All right, Dave Poulin.
He broke me down a long time ago, Andy. He broke me down a long time ago.
So you're joining. I got to do all these reads, Pools. That's the one thing I'm noticing about Overdrive. A lot of reads here. So Dave Poulin's joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. I want to go around the league with you first, Pooley, even before going to the Toronto Maple Leafs here, because Patrick Laine speaking to the media, we know that it was a down year last year. I'm willing to give everybody, you know, just a little bit of a break for last year. We don't need to go into the reasons why. We all know why, but it wasn't pretty. It wasn't good with Columbus. But I think the line that a lot of people are picking up on here, Pools, is the fact that he said, I don't need to prove myself right anymore. He does go on to say that he still wants to get better. It's always about getting better. But he goes on to say, I don't need to prove myself anymore. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, I think he's got to reprove himself. I mean, he's proven that he can score in the National Hockey League. I mean, what did he have his first 4 years? It was ridiculous. I mean, you know, he put up great, great numbers. He can score in the National Hockey League. That was a tough situation. The only person that was probably happy with his output was Pierre-Luc Dubois, who had a similar output when he went to Winnipeg, and so it was hard to compare them. I mean, the trade really didn't work out for either team to this point. The best player of the three was probably Jack Roslovic. But, you know, that whole situation in Columbus, they have to get a star player to really engage and really want to stay there, and that's been hard for them. And they've had some really, really good players there. Now, Werenski did on defense. He doubled down on defense, but you know, they've lost a lot of guys over the last couple of years, and I like some of their young guys. And, you know, I can't figure out why guys haven't found Columbus to be, you know, a better town to play in. And a large part of it is winning, because it's a great town. I mean, Columbus is a great college town. Ohio State is there. It's a good numbers-wise. It's a good rink setup. It's a good downtown area. And so, you know, they've got to win. And they haven't been able to do that consistently. And Jarmo rolled the dice a couple of years ago and went for it, and even rolled the dice in this trade. And he brought a guy in Patrick Laine, who has put up huge, huge numbers. And he's got to get back on track and do it again. But I think anytime you have a year like that, he's saying it for himself, Andy, as much as anything. I mean, he's trying to convince himself that he doesn't have to prove it to anybody, but he does. And, you know, he's going to get into the contract portion of it as well. And so he's got to go out and show that he's the player that he was his first 4 years in the league.
Pooley, you talk about Laine, and let's just, I mean, we're not here to break down Columbus, but I look at a couple guys on their roster that I think, you know, need a resurgence. And the other guy is Max Domi for me. You know, Max Domi was it 2 years ago? I guess when there was an 82-game season, he had 72 points as a centerman in Montreal. And, you know, the previous year when he was traded for Galchenyuk, had 9 goals. You know, Bergevin took a gamble on him. And the one thing that, you know, I know Bergevin takes a lot of heat, but he's been pretty good at moving assets before, you know, they kind of hit the ditch. And that was Galchenyuk. That was Domi. Do you see Domi having resurgence there, or is he a guy that just is kind of plateaued and needs to kind of just kind of deal with what he has in front of him?
Yeah, I think he's still got game, Jamie. I do. Yeah. I mean, you know, he had a huge year a couple of years ago, and 72 points, and he was good every night. You know, we did a lot of those games, and he was really, really good. And he almost seems to get caught up in a little bit. And I think, you know, they tried him on the wing. They tried him with different players. He really didn't get settled in. They thought he and Drouin could play together. That didn't work out. But, you know, he's a guy they've got to lean on in Columbus. I mean, they gave up Josh Anderson for him, and it's a big year for him. It's a contract year for him as well. So, you know, I do think he still has game. He's only 26 years old. I think he's, you know, when he plays like he's capable, we've seen him. It was only 2 years ago that he had that big year. So he's got to get back to just keeping it simple and doing what he does and not overcomplicate things.
Pooley, we were talking yesterday about the Eichel situation. There's some things I do understand about it and some things I find very confusing. Like, if you could just put, like, big picture summary of what's going on there and how you would have handled it, what is the plan there, like, to do this? Because it seems like the only thing left to do is remove the player from the situation and go forward. So what has to happen?
I think the player will be removed from the situation and they'll move forward. I think they've already made that decision. Their problem now is they don't have a healthy Jack Eichel. They haven't got the medical thing looked after. And think of the complexity of that. I mean, if I'm a player and I'm not comfortable with the type of surgery and I go get a second opinion, which is your ability, you know, you can do that. That's collectively bargained. That part I don't understand, and why he couldn't proceed with the surgery that he wanted. Now, there's, you know, this is at a medical level where it seems their doctors aren't comfortable with what he wants to get done. He's not comfortable with what they want to do. Man, if it's my body and my neck that they're operating it on, I need a comfort level. And so, but they weren't able to get that addressed. I do think that he'll end up out west. I think there's, you know, I think LA may be involved. Anaheim may be involved. They've got assets there. But now the value is the question. And you're not going to pay the absolute premium because you don't know what his health is. But I can't see him with what he's gone through and, you know, even this recent move. And I was laughing when this all happened in the last couple of days because somebody said, have you ever seen that happen where they take away the captaincy? And I said, well, actually, yes, they took it away from me in Philly and then traded me 2 weeks later, 10 days later. And, you know, I had been out with a broken hand and Paul Holmgren was the coach and he called me and he said, you know, we think the leadership is changing on this team. And I said, well, I haven't been playing. And he said, well, yeah, but some of the younger guys, you know, we want to give one of the younger guys the captaincy. I said, well, that's fine. You know, Homer, you can do whatever you want. I don't think the leadership's changed on this team. And then I think literally 10 days later, I got traded. So I have seen it happen. And I do think that he's, you know, going to move on. And I think there's teams that do want him and would love to add him. But now the complexity of what Buffalo is asking for a fully healthy Jack Eichel. Well, he's not a fully healthy Jack Eichel. He's simply not. And he's still, when he's healthy, if he's healthy, and, you know, a really, really good player. But that's the arguing point right now is what they're going to pay for him.
You know, Pools, there are situations in sport, to quote Lou Lamoriello, that are an unfortunate set of circumstances. But this really feels like a bed the Buffalo Sabres made. Like, I can't help but think we're here because of the decisions the Sabres really made along the way with, you know, how the whole situation's been handled in Buffalo, from not making playoffs, personnel decisions and trading players and their draft, to the way they've even treated Eichel, and now even with this surgery situation. Then I know we're sitting here saying, well, how are you going to trade an injured guy? Well, it didn't have to get here, right? Like, he could have, I mean, just come to an agreement on a surgery. I just feel like this is the bed they made. It could have been avoided, but they did it. And I know I sound like I'm just completely slinging mud and pointing fingers, but I really do feel like this wasn't an unfortunate set of circumstances. This was completely manufactured by the Sabres. I don't know what you feel on that.
I don't disagree with that, Andy, but you're talking three general managers in his time as a player for the
Buffalo
Sabres.
That's why I kept saying Sabres as an organization, and I'm not going Kevin Adams or anything, right?
No, I mean, you're talking a lot of different people involved. And if you're Jack Eichel, it's human nature to say, okay, I was the second pick in the draft. Connor McDavid was the first pick in the draft. Now, McDavid has not had the team's success, but, you know, he's had a lot of individual success and, you know, with his Hart trophies and how well he's played. And then you look up the road at the first pick the next year is Austin Matthews, and he's watched Toronto have really good regular seasons, albeit, you know, haven't had success in the playoffs. And you can't help but look at your peers, you know, as you go through things. And what has Jack Eichel accomplished in the NHL right now? He's, you know, he hasn't done what he set out to do. Yeah, he's been a point-a-game guy, but he hasn't had any team success at all, regular season or playoffs. Mm-hmm. And his frustration level seems to say that, you know, he's done all he can do in Buffalo, and it's time to move on. That's everything indicates that to me. I mean, I can't see him. Can you see him lacing up and putting number 9 back on? It just doesn't seem to work to me. I think they've moved on, and now they have to move him on.
Yeah, I agree. Bringing it closer to home, Pooley, you know, you take a look at this Leafs team, and, you know, obviously the early exit to the playoffs, and everyone's been talking about that, and even the first couple of days of training camp, we had John Tavares on, and we asked him, you know, at what point do you start looking forward and instead of looking back? And he was said, you know, we just want to continue to grow as a group. When you look at this team as a whole and their off-season moves, the players that they've lost and the players that they've added, do you think this team is status quo? Are there bigger question marks for you, or do you think they're better on paper?
There are bigger question marks for me, Jamie. You know, you've lost a couple of key pieces, and I say that in Zach Hyman and Freddie Anderson. And, you know, goaltending is a big question, and you would know better than we would. Mrazek and Campbell, you know, Mrazek didn't have the opportunity to stay in Carolina. They moved on from him, were willing to move on from him. And, you know, Freddie had his struggles in the playoffs, and that's what was magnified. And Hyman is going to be a big loss. We all say that. You know, I listened to Tavares, and when he talked about knocking the door down, and, hey, guys, we don't question the four players. I mean, they're great players. I mean, you've got two of the top five scorers in the National Hockey League. You've got the top goal scorer in the National Hockey League. Tavares would be in your top 20 or 25 scorers. And you round it out with Willie Nylander. We don't question those four at all. And they may get better. But I'm not sure they alone can knock it down. And I'm not sure there's enough around them to do it. And, you know, of the entire group that came in, that David Camp is arguably the best at what he does, and that's more of a defensive role. And how are the pieces going to fit together? You know, when you look at the success of Tampa Bay, they've lost a lot in that third line, clearly. And, you know, their superstars were great in their cup runs, but, boy, they got a lot of contributions from other guys. You know, the winning goal in the Stanley Cup deciding game was Ross Colton. You know, and right. Think of the big goals that other people got besides guys named Kucherov and Point and Stamkos. And, yes, they were great, but they got a lot of contribution. Well, that came from those guys growing together. And, you know, with the Leafs, those guys have continued to change every year. Now it's Kasha or Bunting or Richie or whomever it may be in that group. And so they don't get the continuity to grow together over 3 or 4 years because they have to keep constantly changing because of the cap situation. And, you know, I don't doubt the core four at all. I doubt the ability to build enough around them to let them just be who they are and do what they do. Because no matter how good those four guys are, you still have to have other guys doing more than they've done in the last number of years. I think Zach Bogosian's going to be a big loss too, guys. I really do. You know, I think quietly he was a real, real solid piece of this team. So now their first-round draft picks in Sandin and Liljegren have to step up. One of those guys has to step up and not just play in the NHL, but contribute in the NHL. And that hasn't been the case with those guys so far.
Dave Poulin joining us here on Overdrive. One person or player in particular that I'm looking at, I think a lot of people are wondering, of course, you know, Zach Hyman leaving. And I know Austin Matthews right now, you know, still dealing with that injured wrist. Keep hearing he could be ready for the start. Doesn't matter. We know he's going in on that top line center. We know Mitch Marner is his winger. Do you think Nick Ritchie can fill that role? What do you, or I know I'm asking you to predict here, but how about this is the better question. What do you need to see from him to believe that he can stay on that line?
Well, he's got to move with those guys. I'm not sure that he can move with those guys speed-wise. And you know, he's got to be the first guy on the forecheck, and he's got to control the down-low play. And I'm not sure he can do it. And, you know, he wasn't able to fit in well enough in Boston to do it with their big guys. And they tried him a lot with Krejci, and they tried him, you know, in various situations. And I'm not sure what makes us think he can do it here. He hasn't done it yet in the National Hockey League consistently. And, you know, I see him more in a perfect situation on the third line and going out and banging with that group of guys than I do in that top tier. And I think one thing that gets underestimated with a Zach Hyman type of player is how cerebral his play was. And he was so good with his body down low, you know, on the forecheck and separating, being first and then separating the guy from the puck. But his body position down low created so much space for both Marner and Matthews to do what they did. His down late, down low play. And I think that's going to be interesting to watch, because that's the one piece where he could really help McDavid is, you know, below the tops of the circle, because he's so good down there. But I don't see Ritchie doing that to that level. I just don't. I think we'll see Kerfoot in the top six playing left wing, just because he's more functional, you know, and can think the game that well with those guys. You got to play with those guys, man. You got to think at a really, really high level, and, you know, and be able to do that on an every night basis.
As you know, Pooley, McDavid is just that he plays the game at such a speed. Like, is it automatic that Hyman, the way he plays, that fits in? Because everybody says playing with Sid in his heyday, he was flying up and down a million miles an hour. And it was, for some reason, even talented players said it was a difficult thing to do. Do you think that works? Just bang, it fits immediately?
Yeah, you know, I asked an NHL coach last week about that exact thing. And he said, well, let's look at McDavid on the rush. He's the best player on the rush, but on the rush, a lot of that is solo. And, you know, I mean, when he takes off and goes, he's taking off and going. And they said, this coach said, if he gets better below the top of the circles and attacks more, that's where Hyman's going to help him. So it's not full length up and down the ice. It's, you know, it is the grind game down low. And you just think of Hyman controlling the puck as well as he does. Puljujarvi's a big body, and then you've got McDavid dangerously without the puck. And so I think, I don't think it's an automatic when you think of how McDavid is on the rush, because there's nobody that can skate with him on the rush. I think it's more what he adds to McDavid down low. And once again, he can think the game so well, Hyman can, that I think that's a good fit for McDavid.
Pools, one more for you. I just want to talk about Vladimir Tarasenko. As we know, in May, through his agent, asked for a trade. July, come the expansion draft, they left him unprotected, which I guess makes sense when you've asked for a trade. But he's there, he's skating, he's taking part in training camp, you know, says, I don't want to be a distraction. Is it a distraction, or are we in a world now where players, whether it's through their own social media accounts, through their agents, are just more vocal about their wants and their needs, and teammates are kind of used to it, and teammates know why a guy's asking for a trade, right? Like, I mean, is it a distraction, or it's kind of like, meh, it's part of the business?
Well, if he plays well, it's not a distraction. If he doesn't play well, as you're a superstar and you're making that much money, then it's a distraction. You know, play well. And then it won't be. And by the way, if you play well, you're a lot easier to move if you want to get moved. So you can control that to a point as well. Go out and be the Vladdy Tarasenko that you've been in the past, and then we'll have an option of trading you. But if he's moping around the locker room, then it is a factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Attitude. Pooley, always appreciate you taking the time. We'll chat with you later.
Okay, guys. Have a great weekend. Thanks.
That's Dave Poulin joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's time to Toyota. Discover your next Toyota hybrid at Maple Toyota. Come see why Maple Toyota is the best place to get yours. Visit Maple Toyota next to Wonderland. Maple, my hood, Wonderland. That's right.
All right.
Old Dog's a little jealous. I know, because you keep bringing it up. I know. All right, Steve Phillips going to be joining us next. We'll dive into some Toronto Blue Jays. Time is a ticking, gentlemen. Do you think they can make it? And now they've got some injuries and the bullpen and what is going on. Steve Phillips can hopefully answer some of those questions next year. I'll mail it in Friday. Andy Petrillo filling in for Brian Hayes. Welcome back into Overdrive. Andy Petrillo filling on in for Brian Hayes. Jamie McLennan, Jeff O'Neill with you. We're going to talk a little Jays as time is running out in the regular season. Trying to chase that wild card spot. Oh, sorry. The dog just popped her head up if you're watching on TV. Just boot her out of the way.
Yeah.
Sorry, she was sitting in my lap so perfectly the last hour and a bit, and now she just got a little
antsy. We don't care. You know that, Andy. Just let your dog stay there. We don't –
just don't start barking.
We're an animal-friendly show, apparently. There's cats. There's dogs now. Everything, you know.
Well, good. Good to know. She's typically – she is. She's very well-behaved. The Jays, though, that loss against Minnesota, not looking too good as time is running out here in the regular season. And now they got an injury to a key player. So let's bring in Steve Phillips, TSN MLB analyst here on Overdrive. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you all.
Well, appreciate you taking the time on a Friday. And the guy I'm talking about is Gurriel Jr., right? Gets injured and haven't really heard anything as of yet, unless I missed something on Twitter about the period of time that he could be missing. But how much does this hurt the Jays' chances of making the playoffs?
Well, he's one of the hottest hitters, if not the hottest hitter in baseball. I think 30 RBIs in the month and tied for a Jays record, a chance to break it with 9 games left. And he's had an extraordinary month. And so it's a big bat that you know, he's listed as day-to-day. He's got 2 stitches in his middle finger. The x-rays were negative, so there's no fracture. So it's really going to come down to tolerance. You know, what can he tolerate? And, you know, when holding a bat, the middle finger is less important than you know, the index finger or your thumb. And so, you know, it's not as important. Now, it is his throwing hand, and that is some part of it that could bear into it. But listen, they'll deal with bad throwing if they can get his bat in the lineup. And so I think it's going to be day-to-day just to see how they can handle the swelling to get it down. It's a freak accident. And, you know, this team has dealt with their fair share of injuries throughout the year. And somebody else is going to have to step up, whether it's Corey Dickerson or Randall Grichuk or others. You know, I don't know whether George Springer's knee can handle playing the outfield right now, so it seems like it's going to have to be everybody else. And so, yeah, it's a tough situation, but here's the thing. Nobody's going to feel sorry for them, and so they can't feel sorry for themselves.
Steve, as far as the individual play with Gurriel, like, I have a take on it that some might not agree with. And I don't expect every player to be Pete Rose or Lenny Dykstra hustle, but he seemed like he was lollygagging on that ball. There was a casualness to it. Did you see that, or I don't know? It looked like lollygagging to me. I'm sorry, just what I saw when I watched the replay.
Yeah, I think, you know, he is more graceful than he is. Like, he's not a max effort guy. Like where he looks like he's busting it all the time. You know, and Robbie Cano is that way in New York. Now, he's not as lackadaisical, I think, as Robbie Cano can be. But I think he realized he wasn't going to get it, and so he pulled up. But I'm with you. Like, I was one of those ones where I walked and I sprinted to first base like Pete Rose. Like, I want everybody going all out all the time. It's just not the way guys go about it. And you know, he went down to his knee to get out of the way. When, you know, there are other ways you can do it. You can just move your body completely out of the way and let the other guy make the throw. So, you know, it's just unfortunate. I would say that it was probably, he wasn't going to probably get it to it no matter what. But I'm with you. I always like guys, give me the false hustle. Even if it's eyewash, I'll take it. Because I think it's a mentality that if everybody's playing that way, then it spurs everybody else to keep it going as well.
With the team playing so well on this streak, and obviously it's cooled off a little bit lately, you talked about the injuries. Is Rio one of the guys that you really only are concerned about heading into, let's call it the playoffs if they can make it, or in the wild card game? Because, you know, everyone else has had pretty much a good September, but he's a guy that they might have to rely on heavily here. And is it concerning that he's, you know, just, I believe he was just kind of stretching out his arm yesterday, and I'm not sure when he's scheduled for his next start.
Yeah, so he's on the injured list, and, you know, he can't really come off until during the Yankees series.
Right.
Is the earliest where he can pitch. And so, you know, in the ideal world, it would be great if they could slot him in that Yankee series and have him pitch. And it would be nice to know that he could pitch competitively so that if and when they do get to the playoffs, they know what to expect from him. So, I mean, I'd rather he get one more crack at it, even if it's just saving him for the final weekend against Baltimore, but have him take the mound again so that you know what you have and what you don't have, and you can make a decision about the playoff roster because, you know, as it stands right now, he's not on that roster. I mean, I wouldn't even have him on in relief. You know, he's a guy that's got arm issues that, you know, you can't warm him up quickly. You've got to warm him up as a starter. So if he was going to come into a game, it would only be at the start of an inning, and you've got to then have perfect timing. And so, you know, it's hard to believe that they could go to the playoffs and not have Ryu available on the roster, but, you know, he's got to show what he can do. And, you know, I get it that, you know, I think the Jays looked at it during the year and they thought they couldn't afford to put, you know, to put him on the injured list and give him a rest earlier. I mean, he showed signs all August long that he wasn't right. And when he was with the Dodgers and these things happened, they always just threw him on the injured list, but they'd always have another guy ready to come off the injured list. But they used that as kind of a way to, you know, build in some rest for everybody. And, you know, they didn't think they could afford to put him on the injured list, but they couldn't afford not to. And now, you know, now it's, you know, it may be too late. That it may be too little time to really recover in the way he might need to get back into form. So we'll see. I do suspect he'll make a start in the regular season. Whether that's against the Yankees or against the Orioles remains to be seen. And then they'll try to figure out what they have going into the playoffs if they get there.
Well, some changes, obviously, and I know a manager can make to try and get the best out of his team. And I'm curious, if you were the manager, would you move George Springer out of that leadoff spot?
Well, you know, I thought the last time in my mind I thought you got to move Springer out of the leadoff spot was in the World Series, I guess, back in 2017. You know, he had been struggling, he went hitting, and A.J. Hinch said, nope, I'm leaving him there. And the next thing you know, Springer went crazy and had a tremendous series. I think it was MVP of the series. And so my sense of it is that I would leave him there a little bit more, let him get through the weekend, see what happens with it. You know, his knee's not right. You know, sometimes you see him swing and he goes down to a knee, right? He goes down to that right knee, the back knee, because as a hitter, you hit against your front leg. You know, so you try to get the stiff front leg, you hit against it and rotate into it. His knee's not handling that. So what he does is he ends up collapsing on his back knee to take the burden off the front. And then every once in a while, it gives you that really good swing. And he looked really good running the bases the other day when he scored, he might have been from first on a double that he was really running. And he looked like he was full stride. You know, he had a brace on. So I'd probably give him the weekend and see what happens. And even if he doesn't hit with Simeon and Bichette and Guerrero, they should be able to try to get enough runs in. Look, they should beat this kid up pitching today against him. You know, they faced him the first time through the lineup, the last time he handled him, but then they slugged him pretty good. They've got to look at him once just a week ago. I would suspect that they should be able to jump on him, put up some runs, and build in some protection for Barrios in the bullpen.
They have to do that, Steve, but if they don't, like, how crushing was that one yesterday? You know how people talk. It's like the talk from just dudes talking or anybody talking is all about that. Now they're done. Like, that one really cost them. Like, how significant do you think blowing that game yesterday was?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's they're just a game behind the Yankees, and you know, the Yankees have to run the gauntlet of the American League East. I mean, they're playing the Red Sox this weekend for three, then they play the Blue Jays for three, and then they finish with the Rays for three. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can say, well, the Rays will be getting the team ready for the playoffs. What to do what? They just keep running different guys in all the time anyways, so they're going to keep playing regular baseball. And so, you know, and there's a part of them that they want the Jays, you know, per Kevin Kiermaier. And so the Yankees have a really tough road. If the Yankees get to the playoffs, they will have earned it because they're playing the horses in this division. And, you know, while, you know, the Blue Jays are playing two last place teams and then the Yankees, the Red Sox are playing the Yankees and then two last place teams, you know, and so they're playing the Orioles and the Nationals. And so, you know, the road is certainly much cleaner for the Jays and the Red Sox to get there. And so, you know, they need to play well against Minnesota. They really, you know, ideally you want to sweep the next three games You're taking 3 out of 4. There's no shame in that. And then you move on to that Yankee series, because I think the Yankees may come back licking their wounds a little bit, because I think Boston's got a chance to beat them up a little. They've won, what, 7 or 8, 7 in a row now, and Boston's playing some really good baseball.
Steve Phillips joining us here on Overdrive. What do you think will be the key for the Jays? I mean, other than the numbers game, right, and you kind of look at the series and you look at what they could take here and there, where is it for them? Is it their hitting? Is it their pitching, right? Because that's another thing that a lot of people are eyeballing right now is pitching, and can they trust right now what's happening with the pitchers? I mean, where do you think could be really key here for the Jays down this stretch?
I think it's got to be swinging the bats. You know, if when they swing the bats, their pitchers are better. It gives them some margin for error. You know, when they're not hitting and their pitchers feel like they've got to be perfect, they don't handle that nearly as well. When the offense starts rolling, then the pitchers feel like they can pitch more aggressively, and they're actually better doing that. But sometimes when they're not scoring, they want to nibble. They want to try to miss bats. They want to try to, you know, not give up one run, and instead they give up three. And so I think the offense creating margin for error for the pitching staff is really important to get back into that rhythm with the way that they play. Because even if they do fall behind, as long as the offense is rolling, if they, you know, the good bullpen doesn't just hold a lead, it holds a deficit. So hold the score at 4-2 and allow our offense to start to come back and score. And that's the way teams can really win. And the Jays can do that. And they did that when they went on their good run. And so, you know, their starting pitching has been as good as anybody, you know, in the second half of the season. Their bullpen has improved. They need the offense to get going again. And it would certainly help if Springer's part of that. It'd be nice to get Gurriel back. But whoever is in there, Grichuk has done a good job at times filling in with big at-bats. Corey Dickerson has it in him. He had a big hit yesterday. So they can do some things to put some rallies together. But I think the offense is going to be the critical factor.
Steve, appreciate you taking the time. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, terrific. You too. Thanks so much.
Steve Phillips, TSN MLB analyst, coming out now. Springer's going to play center field. Not going to designate hit tonight, so we'll see how the Jays do.
Must be feeling better then. You know, that's the biggest worry, right? See if he can, you know, he's had a season where it's been up and down for injuries. You want to make sure he's close to 100%.
Yeah. Al's Brothers Power Rankings are coming up next. Was I not christened Al's Brother's sister or something like that at one point? So the brother and the sister unite next. For NHL, I think he's doing NHL. NHL Power Rankings. That's what's coming up next year on Overdrive. Andy Petrillo filling in for Brian Hayes.
And the final answer out of the first star, Al Brother.
So good. It's a good intro. You know you've made it when you have your own intro, Al's Brother. As Al's Brother's sister is filling in for Brian Hayes on Mail It In Friday, this Overdrive edition, Noodles O-Dog here as well. Al, you got some power rankings for us. Is this NHL edition?
Yes, we're going to be power ranking the 7 Canadian teams, 1 through 7 at the start of the season, on who I think is the best, all the way down to who I think is the worst.
Okay, give her.
All right.
So we'll start at the bottom 7 through what? You got, oh, yes.
This is your expectations or where you think they're going to finish or based on, like, what are we talking about here?
So as of right now?
You know what this is based on? This is based on paper. What they look like on paper. So this is what I am taking a look at, what they've done in the off season, and how I think that those off season moves will end up playing out in the regular season, or at least to start. Things can change, as they always do. But as of now, we just have the paper to look at, so that's how these power rankings were put together.
All right, are you going 7-1 or 1-7?
We'll go 7-1.
Oh my God, these guys ask so many questions. I'm just
okay.
Like,
okay. Go ahead, give us number 7, Al's Brother.
Well, Andy, we know Vancouver's one, so we just throw the other ones out because
okay,
he's
nice
a super
try.
Fan.
Anyways, proceed, Al.
Number 7, we've got the Ottawa Senators. I don't think that's going to surprise many people. I like the Senators. They're a good young team with some spunk. They've got some good young talent, but the goaltending scares me. I still think they're incredibly thin down the middle. Some good young talent, but they're not there yet. So I think they'll be competitive. They'll be tough to play against, much like last year. But at the end of the day, I still think that they're the bottom feeders of the Canadian teams.
Okay.
I understand where you're coming from with that assessment, but you never know when there's a train wreck around the corner. You look, and COVID was a big part of what happened to Vancouver last year. But they were a mess. So a mess could pop up at any second. And Ottawa, they took over for a couple teams and were better than Van, Calgary. They were – I understand what you're coming from, but that could change very quickly.
Yeah, and you make a good point, but I agree with O. Like, I think Ottawa's a team that if we reassess this 2 months from now, they'd be like, hey, they've surprised a lot of people because I did their games in the second half.
Yeah.
Well, I did their games. I've done their games the last 5 years. But, they were taking points off of really good teams, including the Leafs. And if they didn't start 2-13, if they would have got some saves early on, they might have pushed for a playoff spot or what it might have been right there. Like, it was that close. So if they can just, to your point, if they can get some saves early on, I don't put them at seven, but I can see why you put them at seven and respect for that.
Okay? What about Brady Tkachuk? I just wanted to kind of jump on that. I know earlier we talked about St. Louis and Tarasenko doesn't want to be a distraction. I know they're at different points of their career, whatever, but you know what I'm saying, right? Like, Tarasenko's there. Tkachuk has yet to sign. I mean, I think all signs are pointing to him signing. I just wonder how that affects things out of the gate. Anyways, throw that in there. He has yet to sign.
Yeah, you're right.
My assumptions was, like, with these rankings that, like, all these RFAs are going to sign. So even coming in at number six, unfortunately, we got the Calgary Flames coming in at number six on my power rankings. They lost their captain, Mark Giordano. I'm not a huge fan of the Blake Coleman ad. I don't think I don't know about you guys, but I have some reservations, some like David Clarkson type reservations with this signing. He's going to come in and be part of their offense. I don't know if I see it. They were somewhat of a train wreck last year down the stretch as well. So I got the Calgary Flames coming in at six.
Pickle juice, that'll do it for him. The team seems like they're rallying around each other. Another Tkachuk said, don't hate on my teammates. So,
I think they'll end up higher, but I can see what you're saying. Like, they need to put a lot together. And the goalie's got to be healthy.
Yeah.
Markstrom's, I think Markstrom's a star.
Okay, yeah. Number five.
Coming at number five, the Vancouver Canucks. They were not at number one. I think I have them properly rated.
I was teasing.
I think they're properly rated here, right? Kind of in the middle. They're in the middle of the pack when it comes to the Canadian teams. They did some good things to help the team this season. Brought in OEL, brought in Connor Garland. I think Demko, you talk about Markstrom being a stud. The only reason why he's in Calgary is because Demko pushed him out. I think he's going to have a massive season, a big leap for him. I think Vancouver's going to be competitive, but there's going to be a lot of question marks there. The defense really kind of worries me.
Mm-hmm. OEL put himself under the radar already.
Yeah, he was dogging like it.
Two zones behind in that bag skate.
We're just talking about
and it's
Lepi.
Like, you say what you want about it, but when that video gets posted, now every time that he screws up in a play, someone's going to say, well, he's out of shape. So there you go. Yeah.
Just kiss the boards on that one. All right, who's your number four?
The Montreal Canadiens are coming in at number four for me. I'd be a little bit worried about Carey Price. I heard your hit yesterday, Noodles on SC, saying that you're not as worried about it, but I would be. He hasn't played great in the regular season for a couple of seasons now, and he's going to have to be the backbone once again. I think the saving grace for them is now they're going to have a full season of Cole Caulfield. They're going to have Nick Suzuki another year to grow and become that star player that he looks like he could possibly be, but also no Shea Weber. Like, as much as you could like David Savard, I don't think he's Shea Weber, so there's still going to be a big void there.
Yeah, and Price with that knee injury, I know they said he'll be ready, but again, we're talking about injuries again with Carey Price, so it's a little concerning, right?
Yeah, he played half the games last year. I think Allen will be fine. Like, I'm not as worried about them. I think they've got more skill on their team this year, but it'll be an uphill battle. Like, the Hoffman news was surprising, but they would have known about that. But it looks like Hoffman won't start the season. But I could see them, slotted. I could see them. Either way, you're slotting them at four just based on the teams ahead of them, in my opinion, right now.
That's what it is.
What are your podium finishers?
Right? Well, that's what it is. Like, at the end of the day, I don't think there's many bad Canadian teams this year. And like, if you look at them in tiers, I think I would have Montreal and my third team, Edmonton, in a very similar tier. And so that's who comes in at number three. And I think that they're a pretty good squad. They picked up Zach Hyman, obviously, Duncan Keith. Warren Fogle, I think, was a really solid, sneaky depth pickup that they got in a trade. And then, I mean, the goaltending, we'll see what Mike Smith gives them. He's, 39 years old? It was great last year, but we'll see if he can get it done for a second season in a row over there.
King Daddy Topper coming up, Al's brother. Who is number one?
Jamie Noodles McLennan's Winnipeg Jets coming in at number one.
How is that
one.
My Winnipeg Jets?
Everyone yes. knows you're a Jets fan. Come on.
I'm not a Jets fan.
All right.
Like
you got a minute, Al's brother. Tell us why Winnipeg is one and Toronto filled in underneath at two.
I think the Winnipeg Jets, the biggest issue they had last year was defense. They went out, they added Nate Schmidt, Brendan Dillon. Logan Stanley's now going to be in there full time. I like what they're doing on the back end. Probably the deepest top nine in the Canadian within the Canadian teams, and then they got the best goaltender as well. So when you're cooking with goaltending depth, forward depth, and defensive depth, you're in a pretty good spot. I like the Maple Leafs, obviously, but the losing Zach Hyman, I think, is going to be it's going to hurt them a little bit. I don't think they did enough.
We're out of time, buddy.
I'm just saying.
Fair assessments. I like it, Els brother.
It's a good list. That we'll revisit it, but it's a good list on paper to start with. Put it that way.
But like Blake Wheeler said, we got to play the games, and this list will change.
Very early Al's brother's power rankings. We'll get to them after that. We'll revisit for sure. Al, thank you. When we hit the final hour of Overdrive, if you missed it earlier on, right out of the gate at 4, we had John Tavares of the Maple Leafs. We'll replay that interview for you as well. Jabari Greer, we're talking some NFL next.